Welcome to the spoilery sensation that's sweeping the nation.
This is Spoiler Wars,
where TV and movies are fantasy sport.
Hey, howdy, what's up, nerds? Welcome to Spoiler Wars. We've got some catching up to do. My name is Mason Fields, and I will be your spoiler master for this discussion of episodes 3, 4, and 5 of Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney+. This is your one and only spoiler warning for all available episodes of Obi-Wan, as well as the entire Star Wars canon to date. It's all Star Wars here tonight. Cousin Alec is here to try to bring some balance to the Force. Chut-chut, cousin.
How we doing there, brother? Always light side over here. You feeling too dark a couple episodes in?
Yeah, y'all know me, Mr. Negative. Kind of veer towards the dark around here. But I'm not feeling too dark tonight. All my issues primarily are more around the making of rather than the actual like story we're getting. But we will get to all that. Alec, you were higher on the premiere than I was. I had some concerns, some of which I was totally wrong about. First of all, I'll just say little Leia has really grown on me. That was my big worry.
Hey, there we go.
But some of the issues I had with the premiere, I think, have proved valid and continue to be a problem for the series. Where are you at with it after 5 out of the now 6 installments available going into this finale? How are you feeling about it?
You know, if I'm looking back on the checklist that we kind of put together of the things that we were still missing, we did get some great Vader. We've gotten some great, some superpowered Vader.
Yeah.
We've gotten
some of my favorite parts of the show
kid
overall.
Wasn't, yeah. The kid didn't become the entire focus of the series. It's been more about Obi-Wan and the Inquisitor. And I will say that the actress who has played the third sister has grown on me. As a character, as we've gone through her story. So those were positives. There have been, it's just some moments that are getting me where, and I think we're going to talk about a little bit in terms of production, where some of the blocking on combat and some of the lightsaber stuff, like especially the confrontation between the stormtroopers and the not yet rebels. Man, I could have used some movie production budget for that scene to be a lot more watchable.
100%. I think,
but I'm still happy. I'm enjoying the story. I think it's set up for a good finale, but I need something big in the finale to finish that checklist. I need a big confrontation, and I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah, this is one for me with is really illustrating to me, you know, the stuff that I'm already in the bag for, I can deal with a lot of bullshit with. I think we talked about on the premiere, Obi-Wan is one of my favorite Star Wars characters, one of my favorite characters in fiction. A lot of people might be kind of down on him in the fandom in terms of like, well, he kind of fucked everything up. Well, everybody fucked everything up. I think Obi-Wan is in a lot of ways is kind of more tragic than Vader. You know what I mean? Cause he lost all of that too. But was sort of the more the helpless one. I don't know. We can play armchair quarterback, what they should have done in the Clone Wars, all that kind of stuff. But I say all that just to say, if you let me spend time with Obi-Wan Kenobi each week, especially portrayed by Ewan McGregor, I'm in for it. You know, I will have some sort of filmmakery issues with it, but I still find it such a joy just to spend time with these characters each week.
Sure.
I have to say, you know, despite some of these frustrations I've been feeling, I think it's interesting because each week I am far more excited about the new episode of Obi-Wan dropping than I am, say, the drop of The Boys on Friday. Even though I think The Boys overall is firing all cylinders, it's better written, better shot, just fundamentally better made now than not just this, but just about anything on TV, in my opinion. But that anticipation for me always boils down to, man, I could spend some time with Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader today. Give it to me. Give it to me.
See, that you know, I'm going to reach out there and say that there's still good in him when I hear that, because at least there's, you know, you're right. Like, if we're just talking, especially from a writer's standpoint, I would argue that The Boys is up there in that top tier of all television. From episode to episode.
There's still
some light side in you that you would like to spend some time in the happy world of Star Wars as opposed to the I hope I don't get a headache because my head might blow off world of The Boys.
And I think with, you know, like I said, if it's got Obi-Wan Kenobi in it and Darth Vader in it, I can sort of separate all my issues that I have with it. I guess I got kind of good with that in the prequels going, I like that bit. That's headcanon. Trying not to let the other stuff in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. An effort I think all of us as Star Wars fans have had to do over, seven of the nine Skywalker series movies.
On the plane on the way back from the wedding, I did rewatch the sequel trilogy, and man, I've got a hard time reconciling some of that shit in my head. But we'll save that for another day. I think overall,
Episode 8 is my least favorite movie ever made, I think.
Episode 8 and 9 are right there with me. Like, I can forgive some of the Force Awakens stuff, but 8 and 9, it's just...
Ooh, it's so bad.
It's tough. I'm sure we will get there someday. I guess my main issue with Kenobi is not so much the quality of it necessarily. I feel like they're giving me the crumbs that I want, but just not the meal that I want. And I think that really has more to do with these episode links than anything. These 30-minute episodes, for me, it's kind of barely a snack. Tasty maybe, but not filling, really, you know? I think prior to the series, you know, we'd only ever seen Obi-Wan, at least a live-action Obi-Wan, on the big screen. And we know this series was originally conceived of as a film, but then after the, I don't want to say box office flop of Solo, because it's like it made $800 million. That's hard to say it's a flop, but, you know, of course, we all know Disney kind of panicked and decided to kind of shift some stuff back to TV. And then, of course, right before the premiere of Kenobi, there was the big Vanity Fair piece entitled "The Rebellion Will Be Televised," and you know, Kathleen Kennedy at Lucasfilm really saying, Star Wars is pivoting to TV. And the company line, anyway, is that they're shifting the series because these stories need more time than is allowed in theaters these days. I kind of call bullshit on that because, yeah, that'd be true if you were giving me hour-long episodes. But most of these episodes, the premiere is the exception, are basically like 28 minutes of actual new content each week. Yeah. And so if you add up those runtimes, you know, a Star Wars feature is usually, what, 2.5 hours? We're basically getting 3.5 hours of content this way. 3.5 to 4 hours, all told.
And I'll go ahead and jump in for you, because I know you're thinking, it, if there was a decent editor, you could do this in 2.5 hours.
100%.
There's plenty. There's definitely, from what we've been shown so far, it could be done as a movie and done with a little bit of production value, filling in the stuff that I'm missing in the epic nature that I love of Star Wars itself. Like, even though, yeah, we love those animated series and the video games, but those also, in those little tidbits, let you do a lot of epic stuff that the movie and TV business won't do, because, you know, it's not animated, it's live action, it's different. Yeah. Do you think you would be satisfied if it had been hour-long episodes? We got 6 hours.
Oh, yes.
And you would say that 100%. TV was the right fit for it?
Yeah, I think you could have.
It was sitting on 47-minute, like, Game of Thrones run times.
I think that's kind of the minimum bar you have to clear with this stuff, is, like, if you don't have 45 minutes of content, you know, on the week-to-week, it'd probably be better as a binge, you know, full-season drop all at once.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think you have to have at least 45-minute episodes to do the week-to-week thing. A good comp right now for me is Barry. I don't know if you watch Barry on HBO. Bill Hader.
He is so amazing. Henry Winkler hasn't won an award for his character on that show yet is insane to me.
It might be coming.
Not to go off on a tangent,
but it's weird because I had never seen Barry pre-pandemic. So I had binged the first two seasons, loved it. You know, think it's one of the best things out there. But I had a little trouble in this recent third season because it was my first time doing the week-to-week thing with the show. And even though I would have to say that, you know, purely in quality terms, I think it is so well made, so well written, so well performed. Bill Hader as a director is fucking phenomenal. But knowing that I'm going to get about 25 to 32 minutes each week, I'm like, I kind of have trouble getting into it because I know as soon as I do, it's going to be over. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. We're so spoiled with this modern, the way we digest media now, And I think that's a pretty common thing where people are like, I'll wait till the series is over. Not even a season. I know people that when Game of Thrones was in season four, they're like, I'm going to wait until it's done and then I can watch the whole thing.
I've been
and
that they, way with Better Call Saul.
Anticipation.
Yeah, I've been that way with Better Call Saul.
Oh, yeah.
I tried watching the first season week to week, couldn't really get into it, and was like, but I love, but I binged watched Breaking Bad, so I was like, I need a binge model for this. You know,
so that's a great one for me, actually, is because Breaking Bad, when it first came out, I couldn't watch the first season. If we're honest about it, I know it is talked about in reverence now because of the quality that it arose to as a series that Gilligan finished with. But honestly, if you just sit down and watch that first season with no outside knowledge, I mean, you're 10 episodes in before anything of interest has really grabbed you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's and it was one where I tried to watch it live because I was a Bryan Cranston fan and then didn't, and then came back to it 4 years later when I could binge three seasons of it. And then I was like, okay, now I'm hooked.
Right, right. I think it's really, you know, very few things. This has been a big debate, you know, particularly going back a few weeks to the release of Stranger Things. You know, Netflix prefers the drop it all at once model, but a lot of people in the industry hate that because it's kind of there and gone. You know, you don't have an extended conversation about it. While, yes, I agree with that, at the same time, for new shows, you know, a lot of people I think are going to have trouble kind of getting into some of this stuff. I mean, and frankly, a lot of the Marvel and Star Wars shows so far, if it didn't have those brand names in front of it, I'm not sure I would have stayed in after the first episode or two, you know.
Oh, yeah. I would completely agree. You know, I fought my way through Falcon and the Winter Soldier because it was characters that I liked. Yeah. I mean, we had such a hard time getting through Moon Knight because I had no connection to the character outside. Like, even with the Marvel name in front of it, just not having a comic book connection to the character, I was like, yeah. I'm literally just watching this so I can complain about it with Mason here in a couple days. That's, that was the only reason. I wouldn't have finished it. I would have just read a review and been like, all right, that's enough.
And all that stuff is still like, well, I'm going to check it out at some point because, you know, I don't know, fucking Loki might show up or Thor or whatever, because it's, you know, it's Marvel. Yep. And, you know, Star Wars can kind of get away with some of the same stuff. I think they tried a lot of those tricks in Boba Fett, which I don't think we ever talked about, but I had a whole lot of issues with that one. But yeah, so just in terms of Disney trying to sell us on like, no, TV is the best place for this. I think that's a bad move by Star Wars. Now, I will say I think Lucasfilm has made bad decision after bad decision since it was purchased by Disney. A lot of that with the prequel, the sequel trilogy, like we just talked about. But, you know, they are making these six-episode series not because it's what the story deserves, but because a TV show, even these kind of TV shows, are just cheaper to make. So they feel like they're getting more bang for their buck, and at least, you know, the last couple of years, it's been because subscription numbers are what move the market. Now, that era may be coming to an end as Netflix just reported their first quarterly subscription loss. And so I think the whole industry kind of went, oh, shit, maybe subscription, you know, infinite subscription growth is not sustainable.
No, there's a cap on it, the same way that cable figured out. You couldn't just keep adding channel packages. People didn't need 74 travel channels just to watch ESPN. And I think Disney's going to run into a hard time. They've tried to bundle with Hulu and, you know, all of Disney's ownership clause that maybe that'll be enough for them to last. But I think that everyone else, the Apple TV, the Paramount, the Netflix even, they're going to have a tough time validating what they're charging.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
With the amount of material they can even produce.
Yeah, they're all talking about raising their prices, adding ad packages. But I think for the most part, for most of the last 2 years, the content has not been that great. I mean, we've talked about the standouts like, you know, WandaVision, I guess Loki, and some of that. You know, of course, Mandalorian going back a few years. But I think there's a lot of, is this really the best we can do? And I think, to bring it back to the Kenobi part of it all, I think a legacy character like Obi-Wan Kenobi suffers so much more sort of pressure from all of that. Something like Mando, it's like, well, I don't know. This is just a little side adventure. We'll see what happens. And yeah, eventually you meet Grogu and fall in love and all that kind of stuff. But but it doesn't have that sort of burden of like everybody's afraid you're going to mess up canon, you know, or be retconning stuff like that. And the other side of it is like me with Obi-Wan. I have waited, you know, 20 years now for more Obi-Wan Kenobi.
For more Ewan McGregor, especially.
Yeah. And to end up each week kind of being like, yeah, that was good, I guess, you know, is a little, you know, where I feel like back to if this should have been a movie, I feel like if I had come out of movie theater, even if it had still some of the same problems the show has, it all just hits harder because it's hitting you all at once. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you're sitting into it for two hours locked in. Yeah. I would agree. And I mean, well, I'm always going to love the movie theater experience more than watching at home. Just in general, I would ask, because I've had this argument off air recently with a couple people, and I think you brought it up there transition-wise for me, is I think that that's why Boba Fett suffered where Mando succeeded, is because there wasn't a character in Mando until the final episode of the first season that we had seen before.
Right.
You know, they were just exploring the universe and taking those of us that were Star Wars fans on a ride through a universe that we loved and that we had, you know, we hear about or we had seen nitpicks of. So it was enough to keep our fandom going, but also we didn't have all these huge expectations weighed onto it. We just were there enjoying it.
Yeah.
Where as soon as you put, like, if the surprise at the end of season three was that the Mandalorian was Boba Fett, people would be like, ah, cool. Like here. But instead, it being a different series where they tried to make Boba Fett, they're like, I don't know if it's possible to take such iconic characters. Boba Fett's the worst because he's not actually a great Star Wars character. He became, I have a whole tangent about this. The man was on screen for 27 minutes.
He died by accident.
I think more people died by accident. And more people are excited because he had a toy that shot a rocket out of it. And that was a huge deal when it came out in 1981. I get it, but...
But
let's calm it down about how cool he was.
And that's a good point, I think, for both.
Because it suffered.
Yeah, for both Boba and Mando, back to this sort of six episode, and not just six episodes, but six short episodes, you don't have any wiggle room. You don't have any, you can't afford to have a sort of tangent episode. Whereas something like, you know, back to The Boys again, yeah, it's only eight episodes, but they're closer to an hour, if not more. You can afford to go on kind of a tangent mid-season that's not really moving the plot. It's just character.
Yeah, you can do a little background character development, get you interested, but you're also not losing time or feel like you're going to be missing something.
Right, you have time to do what some would term, whether negative or not, a filler episode. But with these short 6-episode, 30-minute deals, it's like
there's no time. It needed to be action sequence, pause, breathe, action sequence, pause, breathe, action sequence.
Right,
and while I have enjoyed the series, I've enjoyed the actors, and we'll talk about it here in a sec, but. Yeah, it would have been. I think I agree with you that if you were going to do it as a TV thing, then you needed to reward the TV audience either with those hour long, where we're going to get into some, because TV does allow you that chance to get really in depth.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, like it was great. Sometimes people would get mad at the filler episodes on some of the series, but I loved the Netflix series where we got like the background on Bullseye in Daredevil, like. Yeah. That was an incredibly interesting character episode, or the background on Kingpin.
Right.
Like, those were well acted enough and done well enough that, yes, I understand it's filler in your storyline, but I'm enjoying the filler. You know what? Sometimes an appetizer or a side on that big meal is just as good as the meaty, the steak in the middle.
Exactly.
But, we didn't have room for that. And I think I completely agree with you that Disney's. They're just lying when they say they're going to take advantage of TV, because you're not taking advantage of it. You could have made this a movie very easily, and it would have been awesome, and it would have had star power. And I mean,
so are you with me on that?
Christensen and Ewan McGregor.
Are you with me on this? Should have been a movie.
That would be my preference. Yeah,
because I think you can feel the seams a lot where it was supposed to be a movie, and they're just chopping it up into these parts. You know.
Yeah, and. Yeah, and I'd have some more forgiveness for a couple of the actions, for the downtime sequences, if the action sequences had the breadth and investment that movie action sequences have.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, not to harp on it, I think I'm just really burnt out on this 6-episode miniseries thing for both Star Wars and Marvel. I think it's both too much and too little. It's either got that, you know, Bilbo Baggins butter scraped over too much bread thing going on, requiring some sort of unnecessary filler, or feeling like they don't have enough runway to actually land the plane. And all of these series have been so front loaded that it's like 5 episodes of build up and one episode to pay everything off. And, quickly.
11 minutes of payoff, which is not done well in some of them.
Right. All right. Well, let's start digging into the Obi-Wan stuff here. I guess that kind of covers our how we consume this stuff. We're both on the this, at least, probably better off as a movie. And I just would like to see Disney Plus go away from the week-to-week model a little bit. Just try something new. I mean, you don't necessarily have to do the Netflix, drop it all at once. I think Amazon's got a pretty good model where they drop the first three and then go week.
That's what they did. I was a very big fan of theirs. They just did it for a show called Vox Machina, which I was a huge fan of.
Wheel of Time, and, presumably Wheel Rings of Time. Power will be the same.
Yeah, well, Wheel of Time I wasn't a huge fan of, but I did prefer that method of drop. It was that is just filled with problems. But
yeah, absolutely.
Everything I'm reading is the reason that was filled with problems is because they took every single dollar that was supposed to be in their budget and gave it to Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings better be mind blowing, or I will be furious.
I've got a pretty I've got a pretty nervous feeling about that series. I feel like Bezos. Not that Bezos can't afford to burn a few dollars, but I'm not sure it's going to end up being worth the billion.
When your wife divorces you and then becomes the second richest woman in the world based on half of your money.
Like, you've got too much money.
You're doing okay.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody's shedding a tear for Bezos.
Yeah, I'm not feeling bad for that guy.
Yeah. I mean, all of us wish we had $1 billion to throw at whatever fantasy series we'd always loved.
Yeah. That'd be the problem with being a billionaire. I'd be in there for like Howard Hughes making a movie. It would take 37 years to make one season of Wheel of Time. And I would think it was worth it.
As long as it's worth it to you, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about episodes 3 and 4 before we do a kind of deeper dive on episode 5 here. We'll go character by character here in these episodes 3 and 4. First of all, Ewan McGregor, no notes, killing it. Like the prequels, yeah. I think he's really making the most out of some frankly bad dialogue at times, really doing a great job of selling the doubt and kind of the PTSD of all this.
Yeah, I wasn't so sold. I was hopeful. I think we had mentioned after the first two episodes, I was ready for a return to the snark of Obi-Wan, the one-liners, the wells.
Taking a little too long to get his groove back.
It has, but I've actually, I honestly, just with everything else that's going around, I think it's fit the story better that it hasn't come back too quickly.
Yes, agreed.
This has been something I've changed my mind on.
Episode 4, once he finally gets a lightsaber twirl in, you're like, he's getting
twirl
back.
Going.
He's
yeah, getting there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The 4 when he's holding the flood back, and in that moment I was like, ah, there he is. That's my Clone Wars Obi-Wan, and I'm loving it. But yeah, I'd agree. He's killing it.
Yeah, no,
and good chemistry with everyone he's on screen with. I haven't had any. When he's on screen, everybody else seems to be stepping up their game too.
Yes, 100% agree. I think he's been really great with little Leia. You know, I complained about her the first two episodes, but she has been great. I think in these last three, particularly, you know, episode 3, the little you know, she kind of reads that Obi-Wan knew her real mother, and they have that whole little talk. I thought she was great through all those scenes. Really great.
Yeah, the scene Ewan talking about how he wishes he was her father, like there's that feels really true. Mm-hmm. And if you go back through Obi-Wan's character and how close he was to having a family in some Clone War stuff, it felt really like really impactful, like maybe my life should have taken a whole different turn when he's looking at this girl, and I love that.
Yeah, and I
maybe
think
maybe I'm putting too much into that, but it felt powerful to me.
I think they wrote it that way because there's a couple of exchanges there where, you know, the obvious thing is he's talking about Padme, but I think there's enough wiggle room to be like, I think he's kind of talking about Duchess Satine a little bit as well.
Yeah, there's a little. That's what I'm feeling.
Yeah,
is he's just looking at a beautiful, strong-willed woman and being like, I live with a goat in the desert, like you know.
Yeah. And yeah, speaking of chemistry, man, I thought McGregor and Tala, played by Indira Varma, legend from Rome and Game of Thrones, I thought they had great chemistry, and there was actually some sparks there. I think a lot of people were shipping that.
It was, I saw that people were shipping it. I didn't see that. I was just happy. She's such a great actress, and she has not gotten enough runtime. I don't know why. Even going back to Rome, which is my favorite HBO series of all time.
Yep.
She's wonderful, and she's been wonderful in this. And her fight scene. That's the best part of episode 5. We are not on episode 5 yet, but yeah.
Yeah, I just think, yeah, she's been great. She's been great with Leia. I think it's been great to see Leia kind of looking up to this, you know, strong female role model that's, teach me how to shoot and all that kind of stuff. But also the
one-liner about her putting it on the opposite hip so it's the quicker draw. Yep. I love that little reference. That was a great little, all right, okay.
And just the stuff about, you know, Leia asking her, you know, is it scary to pretend? And she's like, yeah, but, you know, you help people too. And that's kind of very foundational for Leia in the future.
There's a personality. Absolutely.
And I thought in episode 4, she was particularly great as the kind of undercover at the Fortress Inquisitorius. You know, she backs down the security guard that's not letting her in with, you know, just very bureaucratic, like, do you know who I am kind of shit. I have some, once again, issues with the kind of choreography, blocking, staging of some of that stuff. But in the scene where she's talking to Reva and it's the I am a spy scene with Reva, I thought she killed it.
Yeah. She was doing very powerful. And it had me question it for a second. Like, is this the twist?
Yeah.
Like, she was doing so well. I was like, oh, shit. Wait, what?
Well, yeah. Wait, is this actually a scene?
Oh, no. She was doing strong enough that I was like, wait a second, my force sensitive is off. But yeah, it was good.
I think we're going to save our conversation about Reva, the third sister, for our episode 5 discussion, because that's really where her character kind of turns.
That's her episode. Yeah.
Got some issues with that. But any other highlights from episode 3 and 4? Of course, I think Vader storming through town, snapping necks was like a,
yeah,
whoa,
a real Vader moment. The him pulling him into the fire,
mm-hmm.
the hatred that you felt, like that he wanted not just vengeance, but that he was like, I'm not here to kill you, I'm here to capture and torture and like break you.
Yeah,
I was like, that is some real dark side Vader shit, and it felt great.
I'm glad that they didn't bring us in with a Vader that's, you know, still too broken up about Revenge of the Sith, you know, that's pining for Padme or whatever. No, like this guy has been snapping.
This is full on the Dark Lord. Yeah. This guy is the Dark Lord.
That those necks that he snaps in town are not the first one he snapped in the last 10 years. You know, he's been doing
that. He's got real practice at this.
Couple of canon questions here. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good.
Episode 3, Kenobi has a little brother. That's new.
So there's actually an old theory. I thought it was just the internet wondering, but
Uncle Owen?
I have seen it backed up that Uncle Owen was supposed to be his brother from the beginning.
I believe that actually comes from the episode 4 original 1977 novelization. There was some hint at that.
That's what it was backed up on by some internet reading this week. I heard that and I just kind of brushed it away. But apparently that's been true for a long time, that he may have had a brother. That made me super interested.
I'm not sure I want to see them tie that back to Uncle Owen in terms of, like, we talk about it a lot in terms of the Tiny Town, Tiny Galaxy issue. Well, if it turns out Obi-Wan Kenobi and Uncle Owen just happen to be brothers or whatever, it's kind of a...
Yeah, so it's Anakin's half-brother. They actually turn out to be the half-siblings or something.
Yeah.
No, I think that would be too much.
Yeah, definitely.
But I also think that if there's a baby Obi-Wan running around that's force sensitive in this universe, then let's get a show about him.
Oh yeah,
because
I appreciate those little if that's what it is, we'll just plant this seed, maybe we'll grow something from it later. We don't have to pay it off here, you know.
No, yeah. That was a good one.
Episode 4, I thought there was some really cool stuff and some really befuddling stuff in there. We're going to kind of talk about all the befuddling stuff all at once, but highlights from episode 4, Obi-Wan getting his groove back like we talked about. I really loved the dark torture chamber goes black and the only light is the blue lightsaber coming on.
That was a great visual scene.
I don't think that in general Star Wars has taken enough advantage of these things are lights too. You know, we got a little bit in Attack of the Clones where Anakin and Dooku are fighting in the dark, but otherwise they've kind of undersold that. So I was appreciative of that. What else?
I liked liked is not the right word, but respected the Jedi's they kind of chose and showed, like the investigator from the Clone Wars being frozen in as one of the Jedi. The emotions of seeing like that he kept one of the youngling bodies here in this
man.
Tomb of Jedi. I thought that was powerful as well.
I've just got to shout out Obi-Wan for doing the Boromir line. It's not a mine. It's a tomb. It's a tomb. I thought a lot of that was fun. Vader going off, you know, on Reva when he's storming down the hallway and he's choking her and you were warned and all that. I just thought that was seeing Vader hustle is very scary. And it's not something we saw much in the OT.
Yeah. It's angry Vader. We've definitely gotten our share of the pure angry juggernaut that Vader can be when he needs to be.
Yeah.
And they've done that well.
And then finally ending episode 4 when little Leia takes Ben Kenobi's hand at the end of the episode and they kind of share the little like, man, we've been through this, hadn't we? I was like, y'all are getting me in the feels with this one. My cold heart is not frozen over yet because this one.
Oh no, there's still light in you, son. Yeah. I'm telling you, the light side's still there. We'll find it.
Got a little Kylo Ren going on. I feel it. The pull to the light. All right. Well, let's talk about some issues with episode 3 and 4 leading into our episode 5 discussion.
Should we just start with the obvious of the magic tunnel?
The magic tunnel. Exactly. That's exactly the first thing I have in my notes. You know, I think that's the best example of like, it's not horribly done, but it's just confusing enough to kind of take you out of it and make you go, but wait, why didn't Tala run into Reva? Why didn't Leia run into, how did Reva get around to the other side of Leia and not run into
Tala? They kind of say, I rewind it back just because they need to. They said it's a series of tunnels, but I'm like, well, why are you taking the slow one?
Yeah.
And why did Reva take, why did Reva take the super fast one? How did she know that was the...
And
so it's still like, I think they kind of just put a plural on that to be like, no, there's a reason it happened, but it was not enough for me not to double take and just be annoyed by what was otherwise such a great episode.
And I think you hit on it at the top. I've been struggling with like, what's the issue with this? And I think editing is the issue. I think a lot of these sequences, that magic tunnel in part 3, the part 4, Obi-Wan's in the tombs, Leia's in the torture chamber. But like you're intercutting scenes that don't have the same sort of time sequencing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The example of that in episode 4 is Obi-Wan enters the tomb of the frozen Jedi as the torture machine is enclosing on Leia, and he has a whole scene down there in the tomb and then calls Tala for distraction and all that, but it's like it seems like in the Obi-Wan scene, 15 minutes passed, and in the Leia scene, 90 seconds was passing, you know?
Absolutely. And that's just bad editing. It's one of those things where people would explain it away by being like, no, no, but, you know, if you started here, then 11 minutes have passed since they both got there. But yeah. But we can also do that a lot better visually if we have a more professional editing team attached to it.
And a lot of things do that, but they pull it off because they do it successfully enough where it doesn't stick out to you in this way. But there's a lot of these things where you're just like, wait, what? And it seems like a simple fix in some cases.
Yeah.
Did you bump at all into the Vader Obi-Wan confrontation in episode 3? Obi-Wan's kind of running for it. You know, Vader emerges from the darkness and they draw sabers, and then Obi-Wan kind of goes, "Yeah, fuck this, I'm running away." And I don't have a problem with Obi-Wan running away, but again, it was just sort of the staging of it where he like runs away and then this sort of doofusy like, "Oh, turn left. Oh, there he is. Oh, turn right. Oh, there he is." Like,
there was a little bit too much of the Michael Myers or Jason attached to it where, it just wasn't blocked well where they're running through this. Like, someone just didn't do a good enough job of planning out, just sitting on the storyboard and planning out how they're running across.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not a hard fix. Have fucking Vader jump over a mountain because he's got his powers and Obi-Wan doesn't.
Right. Like,
have a super cool Vader moment. But that's not in the budget, so he just walks out from behind a box instead.
Well, same thing for budgetary reasons. I think I'm hungry in a lot of these things. For just give me a good wide shot to establish the geography, but they can't do that because they'd have to build the whole CG background and all that. So
no, they can't do it.
Kind of in a quarry. I will say episode 3 of all episodes was like, okay, most of this you obviously shot in the Northern California mountains, and then the big climactic fight, you just found a quarry. So, okay, whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll just let it happen.
I also had some issues.
Our location scout missed a little bit, but we'll let it go.
Yeah. I will say, I guess this is a good enough time to talk about it. I feel like I'm seeing, you know, the volume that they shoot this in, the big LED room that they shoot this in. I feel like I'm seeing it more. I can tell that they're in the volume in this show more than I have with Mando or even Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. And episode 5, I think, was the worst example of that, where a lot of those tunnels just seemed so CG, just backdrop behind them, you know, really didn't look like sets for a lot of that. But small.
That was part of my problems in the confrontations in the 5th episode. I didn't think about it in 3 and 4, though you bringing it up, yeah, that makes sense. But episode 5, there was definitely things where I was like, you guys are in a warehouse.
Yes.
You know, it like we were talking about, I mean, I understand there are budgetary restrictions. And honestly, as we said, we're enjoying the series, but this is just us commenting on where it's missing. And this is what's missing.
And I think, you know, we say budgetary restrictions, but this show cost a lot more than, say, for example, the Arrowverse, you know, the Flash, CW shows.
Sure. But
for those TV budgets, they do a pretty damn good job with the CG most of the time. So it's like, I've seen people do more with less, and you're doing less with more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very understandable.
All right. Any other comments on part 3? I guess the only other issue I had with it was Vader drags Obi-Wan through the fire. And then, you know, Tala snipes a couple of stormtroopers, and Vader just kind of stands there and watches the droid come and rescue him and take him away, where we literally just established Vader could either pull Obi-Wan to him or put out the fire, but he just kind of stands there watching. Do you think those are sort of these continuity errors we're complaining about, or will you give it that's Vader playing with his food?
No, I think there's a continuity error, and I think part of the sniping is there was another part where Vader was getting shot by the laser himself and like deflecting.
Yeah.
And they cut the scene for whatever reason. They cut that little bit because of look or there's a reason, but Vader was getting shot by the laser too, and that's why he's distracted.
Right.
Is what's happening in my head.
Right.
That works. You know, like there has to be something that's happening to Vader. Vader playing with his food was fine, but if he was playing with his food, then he'd let it walk away for 15 feet and then dash through the fire and cut the droid in half.
Right.
Like it's not. So there had to be some other distraction, an explosion, something else that was supposed to happen that we didn't get to see.
Yeah, I think you're right on with that. And that's what I can't figure. I don't know if that's part of the short episodes, is maybe just a lot of the stuff they shot just didn't come together for some reason. But then that's not an excuse. I put that on, I don't know, the production or the directors or whatever.
No, that's a failure. That's not,
Yeah. I shouldn't have to do so much headcanon, reconciliation to make this work for me. But anyway, all right, part four, some nitpicks on that. This is where I thought some of the writing was just so rushed. We meet Roken, who I really like, played by O'Shea Jackson Jr. I think he's doing a good job with very little, kind of doing.
They haven't given him anything.
Right.
Yeah, they haven't given him anything, and it feels like a character that could be a cool addition, but they really haven't given him anything.
I think
that he is rumored to be moving on in the Cashin series, right?
Oh, like, is he? I hope so. I think he fits better than he fits in this universe better than Kumail. Who, I love Kumail Nanjiani, but so far every time he's in this series, it's kind of taken me out of it a little bit. It's like, you're just doing the Kumail thing. Like this feels like a digression into a Marvel movie for a minute,
Well, I will disagree. I actually liked him in episode two. He felt like
I liked him more in two. Yeah, I liked him in two. I don't so much.
Well, like we him haven't got. I wasn't going to jump into five yet, but I was surprised to see him reappear.
Yeah,
that was surprising. I like O'Shea. He's a good actor. I think he's going to get some more runtime going forward as the Cash and Andor series is coming out too.
I just think they really hurt him by the writing, particularly in his introductory scene. He's like, why is Kenobi here? Get him out of here. I can't help you. Okay, I'll help you. This was just like, boom, turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And then we're also kind of supposed to care about these two pilots, R.I.P. Wade, the pilot, who, like, if you want us to care, give us a scene with him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Don't just have him throw a line in the background kind of thing.
Yeah.
Cousin, let me ask you, why don't they have AirPods in the Star Wars in the Star Wars universe? Because the speakerphone thing is not working for people. Tala is on speaker with Obi-Wan, and she's like 3 feet away from an Imperial officer. Obi-Wan's just got her on speaker, so when she's like, hey, Ben, the stormtroopers hear it. Give these people some AirPods, for crying out loud.
This is one of those things where you get in trouble tripping up canon, right? Because it's the devices that we watch get used before,
right?
Before anyone had conceived of the idea of a headset,
right.
that was this is the stealthiest thing they could think of, was a tiny microphone,
right? And of course, if they had AirPods here, you'd be going, why don't they have AirPods in the original trilogy?
Like, why are they using that terrible technology then? This is the difficulty of writing for something that came out in 1978.
Oh, 100%. We figured out warp technology, but man, headphones is beyond us.
That is way out of there.
But seriously,
it is always just such a terrible moment in Star Wars every time they come out.
Yeah.
It's just, all right.
But that's where I fault the staging of the scene again, where it's like, if you're going to do that, it's weird to me that you put her in a room with three other Imperial officers and you're asking us to just believe they can't hear it. You know what I mean?
Like, rather than an office that she could
put her in a room by herself.
Yeah. To hook up. Part of that, I think, and I feel the way they were setting up the scene is they were so excited to have those underwater backgrounds in every scene, which was something that the prequels and the remakes especially that Lucas just kept killing me on, is where he's like, we're gonna have this important scene, but don't worry, you're gonna see this weird dinosaur for three-fourths of the screen. Like, that's what he had more fun doing, with special effects, not directed.
Yeah, 100%. I will say for the underwater base with giant glass windows, maybe you'd want some blaster-proof glass windows down there if you're going to be sending stormtroopers.
It's the dark side's holding it up. It's fine. That's why it's a tube. They're not worried. Everybody's dead down there anyway.
Yeah, I guess. But floods. Just
wash it out.
Of course, a lot of that was straight out of Jedi Fallen Order. You know, Obi-Wan was basically just doing the Cal Kestis infiltration there.
Yeah, but it was awesome.
I don't take any issue with at all. I thought that was all fun.
I'll watch it again. Let's have another Jedi do it.
Yeah, and I will say...
When's Ezra going to come back and break in? Sounds perfect.
Oh, hell yeah. I did like Obi-Wan just, I mean, he's like snapping stormtrooper necks and drowning them and, you know, floods the whole hallway. I like that.
Broken Obi-Wan is no longer the saving lives of the Clone Wars Obi-Wan that he was so well known for. PTSD. He's about like two bad days away from being like, all right, fuck it. I'm going dark side too. That's kind of what it feels like in episode four. Like,
yeah, he's kind of going, maybe. Yeah.
All right, you want to do this, Anakin? Let's fucking do this. I'm going to go get my robot arm. We're going to do this.
Like I said, just some weird staging issues there. The timeline with Leia getting tortured and the little machine lowering. And a lot of this stuff in this episode is just like trying to build tension. But the whole time I'm like, but this didn't, it doesn't feel like it's in the same continuity somehow.
You described it well when you say it takes you out of the episode, and then that the apprehension and your attention, if it's bad enough that it makes you think about the production and stop thinking about the story, is when it becomes a problem.
So the one that did me in was
when, I think we had examples of those happening in 3 and 4 where that did happen.
Yeah, the one that did me in was when the Imperial officer comes up to Tala and he's like, I need to see your credentials. Come with me behind this thing where no one can see you knock me out. You know?
Yeah, that was pretty good. And they still can't hear it. Like, they don't hear the commotion either. Is that
nothing?
Those two guys are just really not. I mean, they're definitely dead, right? Like, yeah. Vader's definitely snapped those two necks.
Well, especially the one guy who at one point kind of side eyes Tala a little bit.
Yeah, like sort of hears it, but is like, I'm done. It's the Empire, man. Just keep your head down. Don't talk to anybody, or else you end up dead.
It's just it all felt ended up feeling kind of goofy, and then the goofiness gets capped off by the the little rascals hide under this coat move that they pull to get Leia out of there at the end. And they're literally walking through a hall with like 1,000 stormtroopers and inquisitors.
That was what got me. So I was kind of letting it all go until they were doing the like, well. The guy's probably just got a lumpy coat. Maybe he's an alien. I mean,
can't you rip the head off an R2 and stuff her down in there or something like that?
I don't know, but I feel like we should have had a better plan than under the jacket.
Yeah.
Like
that whole escape just kind of bumped on me a little bit. It's like they get up there to the landing and then they're surrounded by like 100 rifles. And yeah, they get some air support. But even then, both Obi-Wan and Tala shoot like 40 people each to get out of there. Nobody takes a wound. It was just sort of stretching the like.
Oh, right? No. See, that's when it's classic Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is untouchable, sir. I was forgiving it. Like if Tala had gotten shot, yeah, give me some realism. But Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is untouchable in that scene. It's finally like the Force is flowing through him and he's back to being the best defensive Jedi that we've ever heard of.
Just going full blasters in that scene though.
He's got it.
I think there's some of that that's like, look, I know stormtroopers are bumbling idiots and they can't shoot for shit, but like if you make them too inept, it kind of makes the whole universe a little inert. You know, it's like, why are we afraid of these guys if they're this bad? But we will touch that.
Speaking of, let's talk about episode 5.
That's good transition, because that's exactly where we're at.
We want to talk about horrible stormtroopers. Have I got the episode for you?
All right, let's dig into episode 5. Excuse me, part 5. Gets a little confusing using episode numbers in Star Wars of all things. So that's what.
Yeah, it's much more important there. That's true.
Yeah, just going part 5. So before we get to more inept stormtroopers, we got to talk about where it opens. Little Hayden Christensen, oldest looking Padawan ever, but didn't bother me one bit.
How big was your heart beating when the scene opens on Hayden Christensen? Don't lie to me. You were pumped.
Full blood flow.
I loved it.
If you had told me 20 years ago, I would have felt that at the return of Hayden Christensen. I would have.
Isn't it crazy? Isn't it crazy? It felt wonderful. It was a wonderful start to the episode.
I hear a lot of people complaining about the de-aging or lack thereof in this scene. Didn't bother me. Like, no, people don't have to look perfect. Like, let your imagination do a little bit of the work. He's got the fucking braid and the rat tail. Like, he's Padawan, you know? Yeah, he's got some crow's feet in the eyes, but whatever.
Yeah, I've heard that too. McGregor gets away with it more because he has the beard. The beard is always ageless.
Yeah, they just color it up a little bit.
Hence my keeping it. me and you and McGregor, we look basically the same.
I really like this runner throughout the episode, you know, and it seems like this is mostly Vader having this memory, or maybe both of them a little bit, not exactly sure, but it's mostly cutting back to Vader after these little flashbacks. I will say I was a little surprised that the flashback that they gave us was this rather than kind of what we felt like we were missing from the prequels in terms of we never really got enough of the brothers and friends kind of stuff of their storyline. And they feel very antagonistic in this scene. I think that plays more and holds up better with the maybe Vader was always maybe Anakin always was just kind of a bad seed. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it's just the I like this side of it better. I've got enough of it from the animated stuff.
Yeah,
that's where the brotherhood is for me, and you get to really see them work together a couple times. But even in those, Anakin's always chomping at the bit. He's never that horse is never broken. Like I think every other Jedi gets at some point, and.
I think it was
doesn't work out for him in the end.
And it was really cool, you know, a lot of the moves and stuff from that fight were straight from the Revenge of the Sith fight, you know, Anakin kind of doing the one-handed behind the back stuff. And, you know, I think all that really subtly helps build up Obi-Wan's character as like every fight he's in, he learns a new trick to beat you next time kind of thing.
And he's never, I think because the fan base is so mad at him for not having getting it right, I think there's an argument that he's like the best Jedi Knight to be made on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. I mean, you know,
what they're supposed to be, he may not have, you know, succeeded in a lot of spots, but man,
I blame Mace Windu and Yoda way more than I blame Obi-Wan for a lot of
Mace Windu. I put it all on Sammy J. That's that whole scene. Come on, man, get it together.
Yeah. Bad deal.
Why'd you bring Anakin with you? That's all I'm going to say. That doesn't make any sense.
I actually just saw something today, kind of a sidetrack, but that scene from Revenge of the Sith when he's, Anakin's cutting off Mace's arm, somebody did like a time code and it takes like 7 seconds for Mace Windu's wind up for the strike. And so, you know, Mr. Great Lightsaber Man, you know, if it didn't take you a 7 second wind up, you probably wouldn't.
It's powerful, but it's just slow moving.
Very slow moving.
He's a tank.
Back to episode 5. So we get to the base. What's the name of this planet? Kijimi? Is that something else? I'm losing track of my planet's names here. But anyway, so we're back at the base. We get Obi-Wan reuniting with Kumail's Haja. And this was one of those like writing moments where he's like, yeah, last time I saw you, I got in a fight with that scary Sith lady, and now I'm wanted by the Empire. Not the impression I got from that scene in episode 2. Like, she just kind of probed his mind and let him be. It was neither a fight nor something where she would have been like, "You're, I'm not going to catch you, but I'm going to report you, you know?
You're on my list, but, you know, just not at the top of it.
Right. A lot of those, you know, little nitpicks in this one for me was stuff like that. Stuff like how much time do you need to fix the doors? Oh, 3 to 4 hours. First of all, why? Second of all, you have one? What? Like, okay, whatever. trying to artificially build some tension here, but like we have no concept of how much time any of this is taking. So did the hour just go by? I guess. I'm not sure. There's moments of this, like,
it's very much an arbitrary number in a situation that they don't ever upkeep it with.
And there's this, like, everybody be ready to go, but for some reason don't load up on the ship and be ready to go, stuff like that. I liked Leia having something to do, but at the same time, it's like, sure, a little girl who has no tech ability, as far as we know, get up there in the vent and fix it. Good luck.
You're the only one that fits. I will say that that's kind of the classic fantasy or space fantasy trope. That's always what happens, right? It's always a kid that they're like, you got to be the one to find the dragon claw, or you're going to be the one that crawls in just because nobody else can do it.
Like, yeah, you fit. I thought Obi-Wan's turn here was a little bit overdramatic in terms of like, do what Leia says. If you trust me, then you trust her. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, I know she's, you know, a good kid, but she's still like seven. So like, does somebody want to make sure she knows what she's doing up there? Or they just, you know, it's just Kumail going, are we close? Are we close? Anyway,
I'm that was the only part because I kind of heard Kumail having the same complaint that you did, but not being
man
enough to tell anything to Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Whatever, he's kind of just like, so what's going on? Like, what are we? At least that's how it felt.
Well,
I gave him good energy points for that.
Sort of the false urgency of it all. You know, we get all these stormtroopers landing and firing the big gun at the door, and we're under attack. Everything's really urgent, but hold on. We've got to stop and get to know Tala a little bit before we kill her. We've got to squeeze a quiet little talking scene while there's literally a battering ram ramming into the door.
It's a piece that was missed from an earlier episode because we've had two short episodes like we've talked about, where if you wanted to have that character, Phil, you're making a TV series. Make another episode. It's possible.
You can make as many episodes of this as you want and make them as long as you want.
You know? But yeah, I did appreciate it a little bit just because as she ends in the episode, I liked her character enough for that to be poignant, at least.
Yeah, yeah. I did feel it when she died. Though I was a little bit... you know, she gets kind of gut shot by a laser, and we're supposed to read that as like, oh, she's a goner. In the same episode where Reva is stabbed multiple times in the stomach and is probably fine, and the Inquisitor was stabbed in the stomach and is obviously fine. You know, it's like, so do gut shots matter or not? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, this is one of those where I'll wave it away and say, you're a Force user, so it's different. Like, you can hold your blood in.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
That sort of thing. They cut Darth Maul in half, and he went on to have a very productive criminal career.
Yeah, I guess you've got to go with the lightsaber cauterized as part of all that, you know.
That's the old theory. Yeah, the wound's fine. It's just, you know, everything's sealed in there. There's no bleeding.
I mean, you know, when that lady got her arm cut off in episode one, no blood. So I think it holds. Yeah. I think it works.
Clean.
So what's your issue here with the stormtrooper and the kind of action sequence here? Lay it out for me.
I think even just from the beginning, every shot that you see is not a battlefield setup. It's a guy punching a door.
Yeah.
The battering ram is not... All of these, even in the bad movies, even in episode 8, the like assault on the bunker was at least still enjoyable Star Wars action. You know, it's the little speeders flying around and these wide sweeping panoramas as monstrous ships land. Like, it makes me feel a disconnect because if Vader, like, and I'm comparing it to a bad movie in episode 8, but like Kylo Ren was like, you know, when Kylo Ren says Skywalker's there, if Vader said Kenobi was there, he's not showing up with like 11 dudes,
right?
You know, he's started showing up with like an AT-AT regiment, and he's going to burn the fucking planet to the ground, and his entire Star Destroyer, the Executor, is going to be in the sky above, ready to bombard anything that moves. You know,
that was my question: is like, why do we need the land ground troops at all? Can't we just bombard these people from space? Okay, I'll give you the, like, they're in caverns or something, but still, like, you could bury them in there if you wanted to. Now, granted, dramatically less interesting, so I don't fault them for that. My issue was more the, when the door does finally come open, and yes, I'm saving all the, like, Reva-specific stuff for the end here, but let's talk about kind of that moment from where the doors open. You know, they've got the big gun. You know, it's kind of a battering ram, but it's also just a big laser. So, you know, my question is, like, the doors are open. Fire that big fucking laser in there. Don't stack all your stormtroopers up against it. And then staging-wise, once again, I just thought a lot of it was weird. They're like, the two groups are way too close together.
Super close, which made the incompetence feel worse.
Right.
And did you also feel like they were like weirdly angled? Like, I felt like they were like shooting to the left and right of each other.
Yes, yeah.
Like if a battle line is supposed to be two parallel lines, it felt like they were spaced weirdly and not pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, it's like they were...
I don't know if that's the camera work or what was messing up, but it just... it never felt like they were fighting each other.
Right. It felt to me like the two front lines were like face to face, but firing over each other's shoulders to the backs of the group kind of thing.
Yeah. Like a lob laser. Like, I don't know what the technical thing is here. Maybe that's the move.
And yeah, I mean, sure, some stormtroopers fall and some sort of red shirt rebels fall, but like Obi-Wan and O'Shea Jackson and Tala are like front and center, and nobody's catching any strays or anything.
Yeah, I don't even think they felt like, it never felt like they were forced to blink, you know, like they were worried at any point. So yeah, that scene was just a big old miss for me.
It also felt like as close in there as they were, like, Obi-Wan with his lightsaber could bottleneck 100 stormtroopers in that little hallway.
Yeah, but that could have been an awesome way to settle it. If he just comes flying out as soon as the doors open, that could have been fun. Or I feel like there were so many ways for this to be choreographed that were way better than what we got.
Yeah. There were moments when it worked where it felt really intense, or, you know, a really packed tight group of stormtroopers with Reva behind them kind of egging them on, and they're just all going for it. But then there's this weird, you know, like in the hallway scene with Tala, where like a bunch of stormtroopers pass her and just kind of leave her, you know, like a whole group of them goes past and could have killed her, but no, they just sort of leave her for the rest. And I don't know, just this kind of like weird, I don't know what to call it. It's not choreography, because I think in general, the fight choreography has been good, particularly in this episode here in a minute, with a little force choreography fight, I thought was fucking great. But it's either the staging of all this or the editing or a little bit of both, I guess.
Maybe I'll put it on the storyboard again then, where they're just not thinking out the full battle and they're just putting it up piece by piece.
Yeah, that kind of feels
way. It's just not organized correctly.
And I don't want to put, I mean, the series has been directed by Deborah Chow. She's an established TV director, has directed a couple of good episodes of Mando, you know, done stuff like Better Call Saul and whatnot. But I think we're seeing something here where, like, she's really good at coming in and directing a self-contained episode of TV. Maybe not necessarily as skilled with sort of the showrunner part of all this, that is what the sixth episode deal entails, where I just feel like a lot of these little things are so easily solved if somebody just had a little more time to think about it. I don't know. And for a script that was, you know, gestating for 5 years, basically, like it seems.
How could it be rushed? Yeah, is the problem. Like, exactly. We're outsiders, obviously. So maybe there's something we don't know, but it feels rushed.
All right, well, let's get into the Reva stuff.
Reva.
Yeah, I first want to say I 100% agree with you, cousin. I think the actress has been good. Moses Ingram has done a great job and has really grown on me. I don't want to attack the actress because I don't think it's her fault. And we should also say she has been getting a whole lot of really nasty racist attacks from the Star Wars fan community. As Kenobi, as Ewan McGregor
said, is there a worse fan community than Star Wars? I say this as a lifelong member, but the internet presence is the worst.
It's pretty bad, you know, reminiscent of the Kelly Marie Tran, Rose Tico stuff from the sequel trilogy. So all that being said, I think the actress is doing a pretty good job. The character was working for me, but they kind of broke it for me in this episode.
Okay, tell me how, because I liked it. I did. I felt like I was happy with it, but give me your run.
Well, for me, it just boils down to I do not buy that she has been on this mission to kill Vader, especially when her motivation for doing so is, he stabbed me and he killed all my youngling friends. Okay, so your solution to that is to join him and watch and help him kill a whole bunch of more kids just so you can get to him. You know, I don't buy the sort of long con there. Did it work for you?
I do like it because I think it's an old dark side thing where hate takes over everything else. Nothing else matters. It's why I buy her in the end of it, and it explains the way she acts for the entirety of it to me, where she is just a single point of boiling hate. It's not a complex character. Mm-hmm. I think she does a good job with it, but it's just a true driven. She reminds me more of what I think of when I think of a dark side like Sith and her character drive more than maybe than almost all the others that have been portrayed in live action stuff. I think she stays truer to the brand of it being, once that breaks in you, once that you become like a creature of hate,
yeah,
then nothing else gets in. All you absorb is that hatred. And that kind of drive,
that. Yeah,
it becomes, so I like it because it makes her like a Sith icon. I think that's how a Sith would behave.
That kind of works more for me than how I was thinking about it, actually, in terms of that. You know, there's the a little bit of a discrepancy because, like, the Inquisitors aren't Sith, really, but maybe she knows.
Yeah, they're never powerful enough to be elevated to right. the Sith Lord because the rule of two, but...
right, don't get me started on the rule of two. The rule of yep. fucking stupid is what that is. But,
yep.
Anyway, good. I'm glad it worked a little better for you than it did to me. It was just the motivation of it where I'm like, but I think thinking about it in terms of the dark side really helps me out there, because I think at least on first watch, second watch even, it felt more like they were trying to kind of move towards a redemptive arc. Or say, you know, she's not really a bad guy. She's kind of a secret Jedi all along. That doesn't work for me. But same.
No, if they tried to go, if we have something else that happens or another season and she's wearing the light side all of a sudden, then you're going to hear me flip and be like, nope, not on board.
Yeah.
But I think she is a pure hate Sith. And that's what it is.
Can I digress for a minute here on a larger Star Wars idea, this idea of redemptive arcs for villains? Of course, the principal example being Darth Vader. There's some analogies there to Kylo Ren. But starting with Darth Vader, when I was a kid and just watched the this is pre-prequels. This is when we just had the original trilogy. We didn't know how bad Vader was in the original trilogy. He was scary, but we didn't know his history. We didn't know all the terrible shit he's done. We just sort of vaguely assume, well, he's a bad guy, but he's redeemed at the end. So I would say at the end of the original trilogy, yes, Vader is redeemed. But the prequels undo all that, because I'm sorry, if you killed a bunch of younglings, saving your own son 20 years later does not redeem you overall. Are you with me so far?
No, I think that's very true. That it's, and this is kind of what I'm talking about, is I feel like it's explained really well in some of the Jedi Knight Academies, that when you're embracing like one side of the Force, this is like an argument about canon and Force magic, but
yeah.
You know what? That's what we're talking about.
That's what we do here.
Yeah, that's what we do here. That when you're part of the light side, it becomes all of the light, like you get blinded by it. They talk about how because there was no gray, that's what ended up, you can't see the darkness happening. And
right, that's how Palpatine pulls
just
the
kind of
over
walked in among them, and then they're yeah. like, yeah, no, we can't see because our eyes are so bright. And then in the opposite way, like once you're dark, you're dark. So I think the idea of redemption in the story is like you're pulling him out of the darkness in that moment. So maybe he could live a good life after. But in terms of a character, no.
Yeah.
You done murdered a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
You're not a good person.
No, yeah.
Like, there's what you did at any point, and even if you go back to most of his Clone Wars stuff, he's dark, like, when he's a Jedi. Like, he's murdering guys.
He's way more violent than a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah, he was more than happy to start cutting guys down because they fought the Republic. Like, you know, I think that Anakin Skywalker is a very good, other characters to compare to, but the violent patriot that people try to say is a good person, that's usually not a good person.
Rarely is, yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah, and I would say the same thing generally about Kylo Ren. Yes, at the end of the sequel trilogy, he comes back to the light and helps Rey, but I'm sorry, in the first movie, you blew up an entire star system, so sorry, you're a war criminal, buddy. Like, yeah, you're Han Solo's kid and Leia's kid, and that's great, but you're a fucking war criminal.
This is my, to bring it back around, just so I can complain about it again, this is my biggest problem with why Luke, like, just let him leave. Like, he was trying to redeem the guy that murdered all those children and was aware of that happening. You getting into a little scuffle during training wouldn't have been a reason for him to be like, nope, I give up. I'm giving up on him.
Yeah.
Like, he can't be good at all. Like, yeah. It's
the guy that believed his father, another war criminal, could be redeemed, be saved. Doesn't believe
would be mad at the guy who didn't do well at camp. Like, no, sorry, you completely destroyed Luke Skywalker for me, Rian Johnson.
But yes, I guess it's just that I think Star Wars fans are somewhat conditioned to expect a redemption arc out of their sort of villains. I would even say, you know,
I think in general media at this point, we've gotten too much to it where we see redemption arcs.
Yeah.
Like we were trying to hold on to Baron Zemo in the Falcon and the Soldier. Like what's, you know, like, no, maybe he's just an asshat. Like I'm fine with, can we just have some real villains again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just some pure evil. You know, they're the most compelling. Nobody's mad at the Joker. Nobody's like, man, I hope that guy turns it around.
Yeah, nobody was like, man, I hope Joffrey Baratheon or Ramsay Bolton really get their shit
I'm really excited. No, you know what was great? Watching him choke to death on his tongue. That was the most satisfying part of that entire series.
Absolutely. So, yes, I would say as it relates to Reva's turn –
and maybe that's where I'm at, is I want her to be just evil. Like, that moment turned her to evil, and she's been evil since then.
I think that adds up to me a little bit more. I thought Obi-Wan putting the pieces together there with very little context about, oh, you were a youngling. Oh, you're hunting Anakin. It was a little bit of a stretch that he would figure all that out.
That was a bit of a disconnect, sure.
And the piece
that was – that felt more like expose for the crowd. Like just a like a narration that we didn't really need.
So I think this is where it kind of starts to go bad for me, in that, you know, Obi-Wan like surrenders, and speaking of Last Jedi, very shades of like, I'm going to surrender, or I'm going to go out there and deal with this and give y'all time to run.
Yes.
But again, the time discontinuity doesn't really add up. So Obi-Wan surrenders and gets dragged out, you know, in the big, we'll call it the foyer area, and is put down in front of Reva. And there's like 50 stormtroopers behind her. And there's literally a stormtrooper in the shot behind Obi-Wan. And yeah, they're whispering, but it's like, you're just going to talk about betraying Darth Vader in front of all these stormtroopers. And the guy that's 2.5 feet away, I'm just supposed to assume can't hear any of this. Like
maybe this is part of the problem. Just Imperial, there's like a training problem and none of them have good hearing. Like that's what's held them back through the whole rebellion.
Or those helmets just really muffled the sound.
Yeah, they've got they've got bad hearing aids. They pop some eardrums on everybody and they don't listen well.
So again, it's just one of those, like, why did you stage it this way? Like, if you want to get this across that they're having a private conversation, why fill the room with 50 stormtroopers? Like, you could have easily kind of done just several different things that would have made that work a little bit better. But so Obi-Wan makes his pitch about like, you're not bringing me to Vader. I'm bringing Vader to you. You can take him down while he's distracted by me. And then so Reva's like, okay, we're going to take him back inside for some reason. You know, by that, I took that as like, okay, Reva's on board with this plan. Take him back inside where he's in there by himself, and then I'll follow and do what we just talked about. But then you cut back inside, Obi-Wan's beat up the two stormtroopers that had him, and he just bounces. So was he bullshitting Reva, or was he just like, nah, fuck it, I'm gone. Never mind. You know, bad plan. Never mind, I'm gone.
I didn't like it. I'm out.
Yeah.
It felt like in Obi-Wan, maybe I'm giving him too much credence, but to me, it felt like the whole thing was a trap. Like he was planning on bouncing as soon as the first thing, and he's just lying through his teeth.
He's trying to get
like
out of
old
there.
Old General Kenobi. Yeah, I got like 10,000 clone troopers like right here. Don't worry about that. You know.
Yeah, I just I'm not sure what I'm supposed to understand from it. Then of course Vader goes charging into the tunnels and is like, I will bring him in myself. But Reva doesn't like follow immediately. So the whole like plan that they conceive never has a chance to materialize, really. Cause of course, Vader, you know, comes out there into the hangar area just as the ship's taken off, does the, you know, Force Awakens, I'm going to pull this spaceship out of the sky. But for some reason, he can't do that a second time when the other ship takes off. Why? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's cool watching Vader drop a starship out of the sky and fucking tear it to pieces in rage, But then the other ship, it was literally the Rise of Skywalker. Oh, Chewie was on a different transport, you know, trick. The staging of that. I was just like, okay, like you establish Vader can do this in this scene, but then he just lets the second ship go. Why?
Yeah, no, it's a cool visual with Vader. We get some cool Vader powers, but I don't know what's happening there other than we needed them to get away. And once again, them just timing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, very, you know, weird. Very weird.
Like, if timing. The ships had taken off at the same time and he just, like, picks one, like, just bad choice, I'd be more okay with it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I just thought staging of all that was really weird. And then to have Reva come out after Vader is no longer distracted. The ship's gone. Vader's just standing there by himself. That's pretty much the worst time to try to assassinate yeah. Vader. Like, he's been distracted. Now he's not. And now
I think she's definitely proven that she's not very smart.
Yeah.
Like, the character has proven that she's not very smart in general. But yeah, that was poor. Though it was good to see they brought the Grand Inquisitor back, because I would have had a hard time with a lot of other stuff if he hadn't been alive.
Yeah.
Like we had both said that he was definitely alive.
But I will say so.
But I like Vader just bitch slapping her. I'll be honest.
I'll say I think this is one of the best fights in Star Wars. Period. Because there's so much character in it. Vader does not pull his own lightsaber because Reva's not worthy of that.
Yeah, it's so fantastic.
He fights her just hands free, force throwing her around. Yeah. And then when she starts doing the lightsaber, he fucking stops the Inquisitor's saber and then pulls it to him, breaks it, throws the other end back in the dirt. Like, okay, I'll fight you with your saber, but you're not worthy of my saber.
No, no. This baby, this stays right here. Yeah. This is for killing real Jedi.
I just love that. And Vader kind of like, you know, Reva's doing all this kind of dancey acrobatic stuff. No. Vader's just always kind of one move ahead. And I just, some of that choreography I thought was just, you know, if you want to call it lightsaber fights or just fights, period, I think that was some of the best we've ever gotten in Star Wars.
That was, yeah, a truly great scene that makes that finishes out the joy that I had this episode, which was Vader. Vader was the joy of this episode.
And I did like the intercutting there, but, you know, Reva's on her knees and it's Vader moving in for the kill, intercut with flashbacks of Anakin going in for the kill. I will also say I loved seeing Hayden, this Hayden, little bit grown up Hayden in the Order 66 stuff, much more menacing than the kind of bratty teenager.
The kid that we'd grown to hate.
So when he's standing over that little kid stabbing her with a fucking lightsaber, it's intense. It's like,
yeah, that's very well done.
This is dark.
I've always been an episode 3 defender. I feel like people just brought too much hate out of episode 2.
Same. I think it's actually one of the better.
I have made the argument that people yell at me that I like it better than Return, but it was great to see Hayden back into it, and it was great to have fucking Vader, the Lord Vader, made enough of for even with the blocking and timing issues that episode 5 was still enjoyable to watch, because when the scene or when it ended and when it hit credits, I wasn't thinking about that. I was still thinking about Vader.
Well, that was cool. Yeah. I guess we have to write off some of the injury stuff in terms of these are force wielders. Maybe they stop the wound, but there's questions about, okay, so little Reva got stabbed with a lightsaber, but didn't die like the rest of her Padawan friends did. She hid amongst the bodies and all that. And then again, takes a saber to more or less the same spot, and pretty much within 2 minutes, I mean, she's about back on her feet at the end of the episode.
She's ready to rock. That hatred grows strong, man.
Which, you know, when the Grand Inquisitor emerges, he sort of, you know, hits that nail on the head with like you know, your hatred and your desire for the revenge have been useful, but not anymore. Did you have any trouble at all with the, like, well, yes, I've seen Rebels. I know the Grand Inquisitor is not dead. So why did we ice him for the last 3 episodes?
I think that's for people that aren't as big as fans as we are, because the animated stuff doesn't get the watch that it should, especially Rebels.
Yeah.
Clone Wars has gotten some re-release and some fanfare with it, but Rebels especially, which is absolutely fantastic.
Rebels, I think, is a much more complete like series. Clone Wars, there's like some really great episodes and some really
Episodic. It's very episodic, where there's three episode at most arcs. I think the longest arc of any of them is three episodes
long. And really hard, like Rebels is linear, whereas Clone Wars is like, wait, what? Did this come before or after the last episode?
Yeah, Clone Wars is Dave Filoni being like, I'm going to show you 47 planets, and it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great.
I'm like, I agree, Dave Filoni. Take me to 48.
Yeah, I guess that's about it for Reva's turn. Like I said, I'm struggling with the motivation part of it, but we'll write some of that off as, you know, Darkseid kind of drives you mad a little bit eventually. But at the end of the episode, so like I said, she's almost back up on her feet, motivated in part by finding, Obi-Wan Kenobi's dropped Jedi communicator, which of course Kumail, like you knew that was going to happen as soon as Obi-Wan handed it off to Kumail.
Like, what are we doing here? This is a bad idea.
And of course, it has been stepped on, and the message is scrambled, except for every critical part of the message.
It's like
if he knows about the boy, Tatooine, Owen. Okay, you really just left out all these.
It's like torturing Gollum. Like, they got the details they needed. All right, you know, they're
Shire Baggins.
That's all you need. We'll figure it out from there.
So, and then of course Ben on the starship senses that something is wrong, and then we get the cut to little Luke sleeping. So where do you think we're going here for the finale? I feel like...
I'm very nervous about it. I'm very nervous that because of that final scene, is our final conversation going to be between the third sister and Obi-Wan Kenobi? Is that what the finale is?
Yeah, I was hoping...
that would be a letdown for me.
I need a Obi-Wan Vader... Yes, an Obi-Wan Vader duel would be great, but really, I need an Obi-Wan Vader conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's where I'm at too. Where I thought that when Obi-Wan gave himself up in this episode, that's what I thought we were going into, the Obi-Wan conversation, and we didn't get it. So it seems like what's going to happen is he's going to break for Tatooine and fight Reva, and I'm just like, that's not going to be a conclusion for me at all. That's going to leave a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I feel like prior to her finding that communicator, at least with her turn in this episode, I kind of thought we were going to be done with Reva, and kind of think I would have rather been done with Reva.
I think I agree. I think that this was a great spot for her to fade off into maybe another appearance in a different series, or maybe something else that's stretching out, some war among the Inquisitors or something. They could do stuff with her, but
yeah. But now I feel like she kind of has to die based on knowing about Luke, you know?
Yeah.
I was a little nervous. Weird to say, because as the series started, I thought it was going to be a lot more Tatooine and Luke-based, and was surprised by the Leia of it all. And now I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to go back to Tatooine and Luke and all that.
I hadn't thought of that. That's funny. Yeah, I would have been in the same boat.
But I'm
really nervous about this last episode, where I thought there was a lot of things left in good places between 4 and 5. And I don't know. I don't know how they're going to end it in 28 minutes.
Right.
If you gave me an hour, I could see it.
100%. And I've fallen into that trap with every one of these Marvel shows and even the other Star Wars shows. It's like, well, surely the finale will be an hour. 41 minutes, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm nervous as well. I feel like the stuff I want to see and what the show has been leading to is this sort of final confrontation between Obi-Wan and Vader. And I don't know how we get that and service the Reva stuff.
Vader not find out about Luke.
Exactly. How do we have that all without
number one problem of this all happening?
Breaking canon. Yeah, exactly. Which I will just say, I mean, I know a lot of people were worried, and I think we even touched on it in the premiere about, like, does this not break canon already with the, you know, the message, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you fought for my father in the Clone Wars, like, didn't mention that they hung out together, all that kind of stuff. I'm not too worried about all that. Again, I don't think we should be too beholden to, like, no, everything has to tie in perfectly to this thing George Lucas came up with in 1977. And I don't care what George Lucas says, he did not have this all fucking planned out in 1977.
No, he did not. He'll come and complain about it because he's mad that he's not involved anymore. But
yeah, exactly. All right, finale predictions. Do we get Obi-Wan versus Vader duel? What do you say?
The optimist in me says yes, and the realist says no. I think that we might be done with Vader. I don't even know. If we get a Vader, it's going to be a side thought or a look into the distance.
Yeah, that's rough. That's gonna hurt. Especially, I think, with so much hype surrounding Hayden Christensen coming back for this, if this is all the Hayden we've got so far, I think that was a little bit both kind of over. I mean, great to see that one little flashback. And yeah, we got the sort of vision in episode three of him on the hillside or whatever. But like, I don't know. I thought he was going to be a much bigger part of the show. Obviously we're too late to get a whole bunch of flashbacks and that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
I feel like I want to see some Hayden again. And I'd really like that conversation between Obi-Wan versus Vader. I'll say we do get the duel. Because I kind of feel like if they don't know that that's what everybody wants, well, then they shouldn't be running Lucasfilm.
Mason, I'd like to reference you to four of the last major productions that Lucasfilms has created.
See, I'm trying to be optimistic here, you know? I'm trying to see, we've flipped. Now I'm light side and you're going dark side on me.
Well, that's what happens in Star Wars. I've gone to a very dark place after
that's what happens eight. When we pod. I start negative, you start positive, and we swap.
I'm not feeling good about the last episode. So, yeah, I like that you're optimistic that we're going to get it. I just don't I'm not a creative type, so.
See, this is my thing. Gonna happen. I am optimistic we are going to get that piece. I am not optimistic it's going to successfully land the plane on the series and everything's going to be great and it's going to be a great episode of TV, but that's what this has been so far. Every episode has been, well, it's not great, but it had Obi-Wan Vader in it, you know? So, you know, again.
If they don't know what they're carrying, like the stick, you know, got one shot in the gun there.
Yeah, the pieces of it that I like. All right, does Reva survive the series?
No.
I'm saying no. I hope not. There's been rumors of a Reva spinoff show. Not something I need at this point, especially based on the character motivation.
They had the chance for her to escape into the night on the last one. It would be very hard for me to see it again.
Yeah, let's go ahead and just tie that story.
She's done very well, and I love her character arc has been the best one of any of them, I think, in the series. So. Cheers to her, but no, I think she dies.
Couple more questions for you here, cuz do you think there's any chance we get a Clone Wars era flashback, particularly featuring Ahsoka?
Oh man, that would be awesome.
I'm saying no at this point.
I don't think there's enough time. There's not enough time, man.
Not enough time, yeah. I think kind of a missed opportunity, as you've already got Rosario in Manhattan Beach working on the Ahsoka series. Would have been great to see the three of them together in live action, but if we haven't gotten it now, I'd be really surprised if we did. So I'm going no on that one. Okay, here's the easy one, and I think we're probably both yeses on this. Qui-Gon Force Ghost?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If there's not, then what have we even? Who's he been talking to? What's happening here?
Right.
Liam, get your ass out of Ireland, wherever you're hanging out, and just get on the hologram projector.
I mean, they, you know, teased it heavily the first couple episodes, and really through the first three, there was a lot of Qui-Gon talk.
Yeah.
It's been absent the last two episodes because I think they're trying to do the, like, see, we didn't mention it for a couple episodes. You forgot.
What a twist.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we have to get the Qui-Gon Force Ghost. I think there's even some potential for, like, well, no, I guess you couldn't get Yoda Force Ghost because Yoda's still alive. So that doesn't work.
Yep.
All right. Any more final thoughts on episode 5 of Kenobi or predictions for the finale?
Well, I'll ask you, do you think any other Jedi appear to start off? Or let's say any other Jedi or Cassian show up at the end to get ready for the next series as a MCU ending.
Are you mean like a post credits kind of thing, or Yeah.
Either post-credits or just a final scene of him checking in with maybe O'Shea shows up and says hi with one of them.
Yeah, I could see that. Or Mon Mothma or something. Bail Organa, yeah. that sort of circle. I hadn't thought about it, but yeah, I could see avenues to that still work within this story, because I feel like we need to get a little bit of a capper for Bail Organa as well, in terms of like, well, this is where we're at. This is where we're going with this rebellion kind of thing. So other Jedi, I don't know, you know, they teased Quinlan Voss a few episodes ago and I kind of thought he was going to show up here. This would have been the
episode. Him and his wife at this time.
Ventress. Yeah. Is that still canon? I'm not entirely sure what's
it has gone anymore. Back and forth, but I love it so much. It's headcanon for me.
I would
love to see Ventress show up. Like that's who kills Reva. She's like, we have a great, that would make me happy if the third sister dies not being at Obi-Wan or Vader's hand. Like, their confrontation is somewhere else.
Yeah.
But Ventress was, like, the backup that Obi-Wan had looking after Luke.
You know, Ventress and Kenobi had some sparks in the Clone Wars as
stuff.
Well.
I mean, there was some, you know, it's good stuff.
I think there might have been some extracurricular stuff going on there in that relationship. Maybe that's just...
Well, your fan fiction can be your fan fiction, buddy. Just leave that alone.
Yeah. I just want more Kenobi and Vader. All the other stuff is kind of tangential to me at this point.
Gotcha.
But you know, going into the series, like, this was probably my top. The two stories I want to see in Star Wars most was what was Obi-Wan up to in the 20 years that we didn't see him, and what was Vader up to during those same 20 years. So. And this series is teasing me with it. I would love a Vader series based primarily on the Charles Soule Marvel Comics run from a few years ago.
What a run.
Literally immediately after Revenge of the Sith, kind of the next, you know, 2 years or whatever, the first years of Vader. I would love to see that. And I think this series has proved it is very doable.
If Hayden Christensen's interested, then you really have a medium.
Well, and even in this one, I mean, not much Hayden, and you know, from what I've heard, Hayden is not in the suit at all for this. There's two different stuntmen that are wearing the suit, and I think doing great menacing physicality with it.
Sure.
Also, we haven't talked about the Vader voice in this. After the first two episodes, I was like, man, James Earl Jones is still kicking it. James Earl Jones is not involved in this series. The voice is done by this re-speecher technology, the AI that they kind of use for Luke. And I didn't notice it right away, but it is so much more authentically New Hope, Empire, Return of the Jedi than, say, the James Earl Jones voiceovers in Rebels. I mean, the man's 95 or something, so, like, voice changes, you know?
Yeah, it's never been a drawback for me. I had read when I read that, I was like, oh, and then thought about it. And it was like, no, his voice has been great. So I have no problems with it.
I have no issues with it. You know, I think there's a lot of sort of concern trolling in the fandom about like the de-aging or the deep fake stuff with Luke. None of that. These are all just tools in the arsenal. You know, some of them are more successful than others, but it's not like a, oh my God, they're shitting on Peter Cushing by recreating Tarkin digitally. Shut up. That's what you're going to complain about in this? I don't buy it. All righty. Well, thank you, Cousin Alec. We will do it again next week for the season finale of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Hopefully you're going to be right, Cousin, and I'm going to be wrong. And then I can celebrate again. We can be high-fiving. But
I hope I can be on the light side next week, but
yeah.
I am rarely on the light side for finales, so. But that's why I actually kind of think it's better doing this the day after that I've had some time to process it, because usually initially after the watch, I'm like, focus on the negative.
Stadler and Waldorf in you at that point. It's just grumpy jokes.
But whereas a day to marinate on it, and it's like, okay, value the things I did like, critique the things I didn't. But just because there is stuff to critique does not make it bad or unentertaining in any way.
Yeah.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SpoilerWarsPod. My name is Mason Fields. Until next time. Stay spoilery, everybody.